Blog Talk Radio.
Our parents raised us to be conscious, God-fearing human beings. They were both educators with an eye on what worked and were not afraid to get involved to help students achieve success. Our home was always full of cheerleaders or softball players that my mother coached after working all day teaching middle school math to students. Some of the girls were her pupils and would stay with us over the weekend, even attending church with us if their parents hadn't picked them up on the night before. My parents were civic-minded folk, taking extra time for kids. They risked being chastised by a system that often doesn't allow for social interference outside of school, even if it helps kids. We learned to share, and I had no idea it was an issue for my sister. She hates me, and honestly, I don't know why. I don't even think the reasons matter. I do know that greed is an evil spirit. I had let her verbal assault from a few months prior slide by without incident. She'd accosted me while our mother was in rehab with her voice box recently removed.
Welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio for Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. I'm Andrea Daniel. What you just heard was a portion of a reading by our guest, C. Imani Williams, from a recent book talk she gave in Detroit at Hippin's Inn in the North End for the new release of the anthology Reflections of a Survivor that she co-authored. Her piece is entitled A Legacy of Love and Betrayal. And here's a little bit about C. Imani Williams. She is a freelance writer, essayist, and poet, and a social human justice activist. She holds an MFA in creative nonfiction writing from Antioch University, Los Angeles, and a master's in guidance and counseling from Eastern Michigan University. A queer black womanist, Imani uses her voice to raise awareness in efforts to help empower others. Her work has been published in Pride Source, Between the Lines, Tuscan Weekly, The Michigan Citizen, Harlem Times, and with various other popular culture, health, news blogs, and magazines, including Dope Magazine, For Harriet, TravelPride.org, and YBLTV. Her book publications include co-authoring Reflections of a Survivor, arranged by Melanie Hill. Imani shared insight in Unconditional, a comprehensive guide for parents of LGBTQ youth. To Lonnie Erickson, she provided the foreword for Intimacy, Shannon Ford Jefferson, and was a contributor for Poets and Allies for Resistance in 2015, an anthology. C. Imani Williams and I had a wonderful conversation right after her recent book talk that she gave at Hippin's Inn in the North End. And here is that interview.
Our parents raised us to be conscious, God-fearing human beings. They were both educators with an eye on what worked and were not afraid to get involved to help students achieve success. Our home was always full of cheerleaders or softball players that my mother coached after working all day teaching middle school math to students. Some of the girls were her pupils and would stay with us over the weekend, even attending church with us if their parents hadn't picked them up on the night before. My parents were civic-minded folk, taking extra time for kids. They risked being chastised by a system that often doesn't allow for social interference outside of school, even if it helps kids. We learned to share, and I had no idea it was an issue for my sister. She hates me, and honestly, I don't know why. I don't even think the reasons matter. I do know that greed is an evil spirit. I had let her verbal assault from a few months prior slide by without incident. She'd accosted me while our mother was in rehab with her voice box recently removed.
So, Imani, you started your talk out by asking if people have a living will of some sort. Why?
Because I asked about a will or a living will to ensure that people, attendees, understood the importance of having a document, a legal document, one that cannot be altered. On hand when people's loved ones leave. and they are tasked with handling their business.
How does that tie into the story of your story in the book, Reflections of a Survivor?
It ties into A Legacy of Love Betrayed, my story, because my mother had a will and my father had a will. They did not have, as far as I know, a living will, which I understand, and I am not by any means a legal professional. I just am sharing my story. My understanding is that a living will is not able to be altered at all under any circumstance. And I have friends whose parents had living wills, and the stipulation, it was very straightforward. It said that if anybody tried to challenge that, any of the surviving children attempted to go against it in any way, they would automatically lose what they had coming. That took care of everything. Things were divided as their parents had, as their mother had stipulated.
So tell us a little bit about your story.
My mother passed from throat cancer in March of 2011. She had it had been in remission for about 14 or 15 years, and when she quit smoking all those many years ago, she was at 2 packs a day, and she quit cold turkey, but that is exactly the type of strong black woman my mother was. And she didn't touch them again, and she had some tests run and learned that it was back. And within 7 months' time, she lost her voice box, and this was a woman who loved to talk and a woman who loved to eat and entertain. She was not able to speak any longer, and she was an educator, a math teacher for middle school students for 52 years. And she kept up her educator stance, and she would write everything down. You better have it right when she looks at you. And she was a strong Sagittarian. And so within 7 months, the cancer had spread and was filling her on her lungs. And that would be, as the doctors explained, what took her life. She would just stop breathing. She would like choke to death. And that was hard. It was very hard watching, but she was so strong that I never got to cry in front of her. She wouldn't have it. And she wrote down, you know, you haven't seen me cry. Take that down the hall and get yourself together and come back. And it wasn't until in-home hospice, which was a wonderful, wonderful team, gave me permission to go ahead and cry, that I was able to have some sort of release. And so my mother was in a coma about a week, and during that time, my sibling and I, which should have been a team effort, there was a lot of dissension going on. She held power of attorney for financial concerns for both my mother and my father, and my daddy passed in 2005, the day after my 41st birthday. He held on for my birthday due to complications of a house fire, our second house fire. So it's been a lot of trauma. And I was going through a divorce at the same time that my mother was dying, and I was all the way living in California while, you know, everyone was here in Michigan. So there was a lot going on. I was in grad school, and I was due to complete that December. And my mother said, finish, finish. I don't know, you know, what her intuition was, but she was like, finish, and you finish right now. Finish, complete what you started. And I set out to do that. And somewhere in there, my sister and I just went from bad to worse. There's just the two of us. We've both been afforded a lot by way of education from our educator parents, and I think that to whom much is given, much is required, and that is give back. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what she does, because I don't know who she is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But she has seen to it to ensure that she was able to, through her legal finesse, acquire that which was left for the two of us, as well as my two adult children and my, at that time, two living grandchildren. And she has kind of helped herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that I share my story so that others are encouraged to have the conversations that are needed with their loved ones before they transition.
Mm-hmm.
Because people work hard for their things, and you know, legacy matters. You know, land matters.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a time in this country where, you know, you need to get you a little piece of something and hold on to it, right? If you can, you know, plant you a garden. You know, we want to eat. Everything is poison now. So we want to find some positive and some flowers and some sunshine and things. And so when people leave specific instructions on how they want things carried out, we are tasked with honoring that.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was any dissension at all between siblings, no matter how uncomfortable it is, I just urge people to have the conversations. I don't, you know, claim to know, you know, what bug has bitten my sister. I have, though, been tasked with forgiving her, and I still grapple. There are some days I think for the most part I have more for me and my sanity than for her.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will eat you. That type of it grows, it festers, that type of discontent that then begins to border on something else is a dangerous territory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's especially dangerous for me as an Intuit, somebody who just feels extra hard of everything, you know, double.
Mm-hmm.
To take all that on. And on the inside, that stress would kill me. So it is really important that I use whatever tools I have and whatever resources I have to combat anxiety,
mm-hmm.
to combat depression, to deal with self-care for my mental and emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
I am a former, I am an alcoholic. I'm a former drunk. I used to love champagne,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have to share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could sit and have some cocktails, but you needed to have your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was selfish with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole spirit was just not a good look on me, even though it was champagne. Too much of anything to excess is not good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thankful to just be free from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to watch my triggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was certainly triggered with the loss of my mother, and then the subsequent draw into a probate court situation that lasted 18 months that never ever should have been.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, that is it's a hate crime that's taken place, A, because I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and I talk about it because my perpetrator, my paternal grandfather, never, ever, ever did a day of time.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he was never charged. As a matter of fact, I was made to go to his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, that's the day on the drive down from Detroit to Chattanooga, Tennessee, the day that I lost like respect for myself. They were honoring a pedophile. They had nothing but good things to say about him for 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I internalized that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get help for that. So, consequently, I was out there for a lot of years in a lot of ways. And my mother's passing and wishing to honor her legacy has, it all sat me down. You know, I've had three marriages. I am sat down. I am in my seventh year of celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
It has provided clarity.
Mm-hmm.
It has given me an understanding for taking the name Imani 30 years ago and taking it legally, which was, like, really huge in my family. My mother was like, man, nothing's good enough for you, not even your name. You got to go change that. I did.
Mm-hmm.
Imani means faith.
Right.
I didn't know how all of this was going to connect, but it has.
Mm-hmm.
And I stand on Imani. I keep the C for my mother, and I keep it because I'm a writer, and it gives me a little bit of autonomy. You're not quite sure if I'm male or female until
mm-hmm.
you know, read the first line, or then you know. But
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So you talked about your sister, and that's what a lot of the story is, a legacy of love betrayed. Was the relationship between you and your sister, was it always contentious, or did it somehow turn to be that?
We grew up in a tumultuous, we had a tumultuous childhood
mm-hmm.
because of daddy's illness. My dad was the coolest. I refer to him as my cool cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he turned me on to so much, but he did suffer with bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
which is greatly misunderstood in the black community at large. And I think because of our childhood, I'm a communicator and a talker. I get it honestly on both sides,
mm-hmm.
from my mother and my father. But
mm-hmm.
my dad was the kind of cat who could, you know, it could be a half day at school, so he'd do a half day of work or whatever, take the rest of the afternoon off and go home and change out of that suit and tie that the Morehouse man
mm-hmm.
and him had him present,
mm-hmm.
And put on some jeans and a t-shirt and kick it with the folks on the corner,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he could take it from the boardroom with the President of the United States down to Willie and Jack on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about him. But when he was in a manic state, he would maybe be at a diner all night talking to somebody. And this conversation, because he is in a manic state, means he's not going to sleep until he crashes.
Mm-hmm.
So this person might get invited home. And my mother was not about to have anybody. She already been through my thing with me.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I never gave an age. I think I told when I was 6.
Mm-hmm.
When I remember. That's the earliest recollection I have. Could be more, but that's when I remembered. But he might bring somebody home. And so my mother was not having that. So we would literally, in a moment's notice, because you never know when you're going to go from into a manic depressive episode. So it was almost as if we walked on eggshells waiting for this to happen,
mm-hmm.
and it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we would pick up and we would go to a friend of hers' house, and same neighborhood, Northwest Detroit. My cousin would drop us off. She would keep my mother's car because Daddy knew where my mother's friends lived, and if he saw the car, then he would know we were there. And we would have to stay inside. We were not allowed to go outside because he might,
mm-hmm.
you know, pick us up. And I just remember one year, the Temptations album was out, and the song Alvin Stone, Birth of a Gangster, I just remember that playing on the turntable,
mm-hmm.
the LP playing. And in that household, there were three boys, and they stayed inside with us.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how she processed
mm-hmm.
any of this.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot to shield her as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
I took my role as a big sister very seriously, and consequently, I did a lot of spoiling to her.
Mm-hmm.
I spoiled her a lot. So you asked, have we always been this way? I think that she's invented a competition of sorts. I think that it is in part due to her queer-ass sister having, at that point, when my mother passed, I had been married 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I had the children. And I think at some point, some level, that bothers her. I, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
I would never aspire to be. You know, while I admire the tenacity that it takes to become an attorney, that would not be from that. That would not be me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've chosen different paths. I did a master's in guidance and counseling, and one in creative writing, so that I can do healing arts work and do it more tightly within communities that I believe need to recover from disenfranchisement and marginalization. She went a different way with it. She doesn't need the money. It's just a give back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to make the amount of money. I don't aspire to make a whole bunch of money. I aspire to have some peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
and to make sure my grandkids and that my community are on track for a better tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
But no, we've never even had a physical fight. And what I felt with my mother's illness was she was really itching for me. If she could have gotten those policemen to take me away at any point,
mm-hmm.
whether we had a physical confrontation or it got out of hand verbally, which it did in the office of Oakland County, when you get ready to go to court,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
the probate office,
right. So let me ask you
mm-hmm.
this: in the book, you talk about you're very transparent. I mean, even in our interview, you're very transparent
yeah.
about what has happened in your life, the sexual assault, the rift between, if you want to call it a rift between you and your sister, you know, your alcoholism and all of that. And you mentioned during your talk that some family members aren't really happy with your transparency. And so I know a lot of writers grapple with the knowledge that they're sharing publicly,
mm-hmm.
that their family members are getting wind to. So how do you reconcile your family members' unhappiness? Because that's what a lot of writers, you know, like I said, grapple with. How do you reconcile that within yourself to keep your transparency alive?
I've told those that I have contact with that I will be writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask their opinion.
Mm.
If there was an opinion for me to care about, it would come from my daughters.
Mm.
And I have their support. And that's really all I care about.
Okay.
That's all I care about.
Right.
Right. That's just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And something that you also mentioned during the talk is that you mentioned something about writing through grief and getting your life back. Is that what this book is about for you?
It absolutely is. I think that the process has been so elaborate. I mean, I started journaling in 2009, just personal journal entries about what was going on and how it was making me feel, and you know, kind of my private talks with my creator, you know, and I go back to them from time to time, but it has definitely been a process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in the book, Reflections of a Survivor, there are 3 other writers who are part of the collection. Yours is
5 other writers.
5 other.
Mm-hmm.
5 other
six
writers.
Of us all together.
Right. Okay. 6 of you all together.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about how it all came together and how did you come to be involved in the project? Because it's a mighty project.
Thank you.
Of survival that everybody is telling.
Melanie Hill is a Baltimore socialpreneur who shared her story through a writing group that I happened to admin, Writers Black Artists Connected on Facebook. And this is her third book that she's put out in 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Her story is incredible. And so what she did, she posted on our page, Writers Black Artists Connected, she posted that She was looking for contributing writers.
Mm.
And I was intrigued. I listened to her story, and I wanted to know more. And what she's doing in Baltimore is that she's touching black people, not just black people, because she works with all people, but she has an affinity for empowerment for black women.
Mm-hmm.
She's a mother of a young son, a teenage son, so she is, readying him for independence, and so she's incorporating almost poetry into almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
But so she's written, this is her third book. I found out about this project in June. This is how fast this happened.
Mm.
In June, she said, you need to have like your manuscript into me by the 20th if you want to do this. June 18th or 20th. And I had like 2 weeks to get it together.
Wow.
But every day she posted something else. She started doing these live Facebook chats where she you talk about transparency.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so engaging, and I'm watching how, people are coming on board, but it's because she's honest, it's because she's really looking to help empower other people, she believes in the writing process, and she wants to share that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes back to her tenfold, so you're watching that, how the universe works, I'm watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got involved, and she's just so professional, like returning emails, returning, getting back to you, telling you what you need to get in. She's making sure that her writers, people that have co-written with her, and she stresses, I'm arranging this book. I'm not writing it by myself. You are
mm-hmm.
co-writers.
Mm-hmm.
So what she's doing is giving writers a chance to, promo their own books. I know that I'm going to do writing workshops on healing arts workshops, writing through the process of grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one of the first things that I do because I know that this is an important topic, but it's not just my story that's important. She has, drawn people in who everyone's story is significant, and she's working on a second run of this with new writers, for the end of the year. The book will be out by the end of the year.
Wow. So how can people, where do they need to go to purchase this particular book, Reflections?
They can follow my Twitter account, Imani, IMANIWMS, or so at ImaniWMS.
Mm-hmm.
Or Imani is Love on Instagram. That's IMANIIZLOVE. Or Urban Poetry Sis, Owen, Urban Bush Sister.
Mm.
Let's put a poetry in front of that on Facebook. Poetry Urban Bush Sister.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, there's so much so much more we can talk about, but our time is coming up, so I want to thank you so much for being my guest on Michigan Literary Network Radio today. I appreciate you, and we will be having more conversations.
Awesomeness. Thank you. Thank you, Andrea.
You are so welcome.
Awesomeness.
And that's it for this edition of Michigan Literary Network Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to tune in next week for more literary good stuff here on blogtalkradio.com with Michigan Literary Network Radio. This is Andrea Daniel, and thank you again. Good night.